No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my guest tonight, Charles Wilson. We're lucky to have him. He is the chairman of the D.C. Democratic Party, and we have some questions for him. And if you have a question for him, you can call in at 888-628-6008. Welcome, Charles. Thanks for being on the show.
Senator Brown, thank you so much for having me. Excited to talk to you and your listeners today. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, let's first talk about what caught my attention for this week. We've been talking about having you on the show forever, but what caught my attention this week is the statement you did on ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
I personally think ranked choice voting is a crazy-ass idea. I really do. I think it's like progressives gone wild, you know. But you said you made some very accurate, pointed statements about it. So let's talk about that. And by the way, you're more than just the chairman of the Democratic Committee in Washington. I forgot to mention that you are a consultant of Booz Hamilton, and you've held several positions in the D.C. government. So the first thing is, this is very anti-democratic party, is it not?
Well, you know, Senator Brown, I'm glad we're kind of starting the conversation off talking about this issue because it is a hot button issue here in the District of Columbia. And we, as a party, started talking about this conversation, I want to say about 2 years ago. And it was important for us to talk about it because this is something that impacts how voters will vote in elections, and we are the Democratic Party, the leading Democratic political organization in the city, and it's important for us to be at the forefront of the conversation. And, you know, early on, when I was hearing these conversations, it was very much one-sided, that folks were saying this was a great idea, we can't wait to do it, it's going to be exciting, and there was, in these conversations, there was never an opposing voice. And I thought that was extremely unhealthy, especially when you're talking about an issue so important as voting, that I wanted to bring it to the party and encourage us to have a informative educational conversation on this particular issue. We wanted to hear the pros and cons on from speakers across the country. And so we actually started the year off with a Zoom conversation with folks, some representatives from outside of D.C. talking about, again, the pros and cons. And after that conversation, we encouraged all of our ward organizations and affiliate organizations to have similar conversations with their constituents. One, not only to just educate us on what ranked choice voting is, but also debate the topic, really sit down and have an open conversation and debate it and create a comfortable environment for people to have an opposing view. And
well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry if I'm talking.
No, I was going to say, you brought up an important point. I put the cart before the horse here. Explain to people what ranked choice voting is, or RCV. What is that exactly?
Sure. So if there is an elected race where there's more than one candidate, essentially voters would be able to, you know, ideally rank the candidates according to their choice. Like Senator Brown might be my number one choice. Charles Wilson might be my second choice. Linda Gray might be my third choice. And we would be able to, I would be able to rank you according to who was my favorite candidate. And then there's a process, once all the votes are tabulated, there's a process where, you know, someone who might get be your third choice might end up, might be somebody's second choice on their ballot, who might be someone's first choice on somebody else's ballot. And there's a whole tabulation that goes into it to see if one candidate gets more than 51, at least 51% of the vote. And then that person would be determined the winner of the election. As opposed to how elections are, we all know elections is that whoever's the top vote getter from the initial count is the winner. And so that's pretty much how ranked choice voting would work in a nutshell.
Well, let me ask you, this is something I have trouble understanding. I understand the basic thing, but in the District of Columbia, we have two at-large seats,
right,
which actually can't be run for by Democrats. It's really a crazy idea. We're the only jurisdiction in America that does this. And I'm sure if we become a state, the first damn thing we're going to do is get rid of, you know, that encumbrance on the party. But what do you do when you have two at-large councilmen? How does that work? You know, the way it works now is the guy that gets the most vote, the person that gets the most vote, becomes, you know, wins one seat, and the person that gets the second most vote gets the second seat.
Yeah, and essentially, with ranked choice voting, again, voters around the district would be able to rank their candidates as far as preference. And then there would be a tabulation to see who would be those two top vote getters in the untraditional way that we're known to tabulating votes.
They also, as part of this legislation, they also want to give independents the right to vote in either primary. Is that correct?
Yeah. So my understanding of the way open primaries work is that whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, you would be able to vote in somebody else's primary of your choice. So if a Republican wanted to vote in a Democratic primary, he or she could. If an independent wanted to vote in a Republican primary, it's up to them. But it would take away the power of those folks who actually registered for that party to choose their nominee, and would allow folks who aren't either registered or in that party to, you know, to choose, you know, to play a role in choosing who that nominee is.
And we could expect that Republicans might vote against Democrats or for Democrats that I think are less likely to win in the general election. Now, the Democratic Party, in a move, the National Democratic Party, as you probably know, I worked many years for the Democratic National Committee, mm-hmm, and worked at the national level. But the National Party did something that I just couldn't believe. The Democratic Governors Association put hundreds of thousands of dollars into the races of Republicans that they thought, you know, wouldn't do as well in the general election. And in a couple of cases, they swayed the election, and they were right in the end. But isn't that wouldn't that be a danger here as well, that Republicans might all get up and say, Muriel Bowser is most likely to get reelected, so let's all vote for, you know, whatever candidate, Michael Brown,
yeah,
you know, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, essentially what you're referring to is what is called party rating.
Yeah.
The opposing party would purposely vote in your primary so that in order so that your top candidate would not win. And they would essentially could possibly elect someone who was less favorable that they could beat in the general election. So, you know, if I'm a Democrat, whether I'm a moderate Democrat or a conservative Democrat or a progressive Democrat, I think that's a horrible idea. And, you know, I think as Democrats in the District of Columbia, we should have the right sole right to choose who our nominee is.
Well, I have three children who all are registered voters. And when they registered to vote at 18 years old, I told them to choose a party. There were a couple of them that said, no, I want to be an independent. I don't like either party. And I'd say, you know, choose the Democratic Party. That's my opinion. And if you don't like it, change to the Republican Party. But be a member of a party, not, a party organization, because they're the ones that are entrusted with nominating candidates. And I think that's a sacred trust, and I don't think it should be violated personally. And I know after reading your statement that you share a similar opinion. And yeah. I'm proud of you for doing that, by the way, because you're the head of the Democratic Party in the District of Columbia, and somebody from the Democratic Party. I read your statement. It's very firm. Not the least bit wishy-washy, and doesn't leave it, really open-ended, even though, I'm sure you're willing to still have discussions. But I'm proud of you for doing that, because that's what the head of our party should have done.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
And, let me ask,
I also remind, our role as members, elected members of the Democratic Party is to elect Democrats. And we're laser focused on that. And I think we do a pretty good job of it here in the district.
Well, I've read some very positive things about you. And a question I have for you is, Anita Bonds was chairman of the party for, oh my God, what, 200 years? And and then you took over this group of, let me tell you, man, they're next to the Senate of Rome. These guys are about the most argumentative bunch of people I've ever run into. So how have you taken control of the party? That must have been a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of a transition, to be honest. But also, there were members of the party who had been members for a very long time who were very open to working with me to help in the transition. And I, like any leader, you have to prove yourself. And, I thought I did a good job of proving myself that I was fair, that I was open, that I wasn't trying to push any Democratic side or push any Democrat forward. I was here to build a party, to build on the foundation that Councilmember Bonds laid. And just build an organization that people around the district, and not only around the district, but around the country could respect. And I think myself and our vice chair, Linda Gray, have done a very good job of that over the past couple of years.
Well, for 20 years, I worked on a program called the State Party Works, the direct mail program for the DNC. And what we used to do is we used to do mail for the state parties and then give them the proceeds from that mailing. I've worked with every state committee in the United States, and a lot of them, are really, really dysfunctional organizations. So it's great. I just came from a reception, Charles, in New York City, where a woman that was going to run for mayor said that she didn't run for mayor. This was a town outside New York. Didn't run for mayor because she's a Democrat, and the Democratic Party endorsed a candidate before the primary.
Wow. Okay.
And I said, what is that, right? Isn't that what a primary is for? And she said, yeah, that's what I thought too. So a lot of them are really, really need help, and they're underfunded. And we used to give them a little money, but it wasn't very much from that program. And every one of them, Charles, is an honest, hardworking, wants to see the party get better. I don't think, any of them mean for it to be that way, but it is very often. And, they say the most vicious politics is local politics. So, right? I know people have said really nasty things about me, have sent my kids home crying. from things that you said in the paper. So that's a very tough job. And again, I commend you for that. But let me ask you, this is a sore subject. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have to deal with it as Democrats. But we've had a lot of problems in the District of Columbia with corruption. And since I've been elected, you know, several members of the council have gone to jail and several have resigned. Is the party trying to do anything about that? Or is that above, you know, that really, your job is to get people elected. Your job is not to make them straighten up and fly right.
Well, no, I mean, I think part of our job is, yes, to get Democrats elected. But at the end of the day, we're also here to hold Democrats accountable, not only to the party, but the voters who elected them, the voters that they're elected to serve. And we have never shied away from putting out statements if necessary. If a member of our elected member of the council or has gone astray, we've never shied away from that. And we do it in a diplomatic way. But I think it's imperative for a party to hold its elected officials accountable. Not to agree on every issue, but when you're impacting the integrity of the office, I think that's when the party has to step in and speak.
I agree. Let me ask you another question about local politics. This is just informational, but the Democratic Ward 6 Democrats, I get your emails all the time, by the way, and they're very informative. But the Democratic Ward 6 Democrats just had their biennial convention. So did they elect a new chairman?
They reelected their chairman, Liz Engel.
Okay. And did they make any other, big decisions?
No big decisions. It was a nice crowd. Councilmember Charles Allen was in attendance, gave greetings. Chairman Phil Mendelson, both of them are Ward 6 Democrats. Yep. So they were in attendance and provided greetings. And, we look forward to working with the leadership of the Ward 6 Democrats to not only elect Democrats in Ward 6, but around the city as well.
Well, the Ward 6 Democrats, the Democrats that live in Ward 6, I used to live in Ward 6, they're tough because many of them are real progressives.
Yeah.
And this idea of ranked choice voting, for example, I think is a progressive idea with the idea, I think that they're intentionally going after the Democratic Party in the District of Columbia, and they want to get more independents elected. And this is one method they can use. They've thought of other things, too, like letting 16-year-olds vote. Now, I don't know where you stand on that issue, but I've had a couple of 16-year-olds in my lifetime, and I didn't want them to vote. We don't even let them drive in the District of Columbia. A 16-year-old can't drive unless he has somebody else in the car with him. So we're going to let them vote. You know, I mean, that's just amazing to me. And they have a lot of other progressive ideas too. Recently we've had our criminal reform bill disapproved by Congress, the first time in more than 30 years that they've done something like that. Mm-hmm. And, my position when they sent it up there is they shouldn't have sent it up there because they knew this conservative Congress was going to do that. Well, they got another bill up there that allows non-residents, undocumented aliens to vote. Now, I can't believe the Republican Congress is going to go for this. I think that's another bill they're going to overturn. So let me ask you, and they're attacking, we'll talk about that in a second, they're attacking the District of Columbia right and left. But are we getting too progressive, you think?
Oh, boy. So that's, you know.
It's a loaded question. I understand. It's a loaded question for the head of the party. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, too progressive, I don't know. I always think you need to have people in the conversation who will help push the conversation, who will challenge it. So yeah. I welcome progressives to the table. I don't push them away at all. We may not agree on every issue, and that's fine. But I think you have to have an open ear to conversation, and you have to have people around you who help push it. And you have to have people around you who help push it back. And then that's how you come to the best solutions. If you create an echo chamber around you and you only surround yourself with people who agree with you, you know, there's likely, you may end up doing something that may have unintended consequences because you did not allow debate on the topic. So, you know, but, you know, back to this Republican Congress, you know, I read a lot of articles, and they put us on notice very early on.
Yes, they did.
And they said, they noticed one thing, that as the District of Columbia, we were making a lot of progress towards becoming a state, big progress. And they took notice, and they said, if we take back the House, we're coming after the district. And, you know, they made no bones about it. So it was kind of surprising. I don't know if the council, you know, just, you know, didn't read the same articles I did, but I saw it coming. And that's unfortunate that we kind of put ourselves in that position. But as I said last summer at our unity breakfast, like, the residents and voters around the city don't expect or require us as elected officials to be best friends. They don't. But they do expect us to work together, to put our heads together to come up with solutions to solve the district's toughest problems. And that goes for the mayor, the council, the Democratic Party, even down to your ANCs here in the district. They expect us to work together to bring about positive change for all district residents.
Well, as you saw it coming, and I saw it coming, and many other people saw it coming, it's my humble opinion that they should have seen it coming too. And I think there's also something more sinister going on than just they're blocking our path to statehood. And that is that I think they want to hold the Democratic Party up to ridicule because they're coming in at 2024, and look at who their leading candidate is. I mean, my humble opinion is if Donald Trump gets the nomination, which it looks like at this point he's very likely to get, he's going to destroy the Republican Party. It's going to tear the Republican Party apart. And so they need to make Joe Biden and the Democrats look bad. And I think you're going to hold the District of Columbia up for the next 18 months and say, look, this is what happens when you let Democrats run everything. There's higher crime in the district, the murder rates up, carjackings, all the same problems that every metropolitan area has. But they will leave that out of the narrative. They will only talk about the District of Columbia. And I think they're really going to make a whipping boy out of the district in order to score points, because that's what they do with all legislation in the district, for example. You know, when they attack our gun legislation, it's not, I don't think it's because they hate it. I think it's because they want to make points with the NRA. You know, and they're going to want to make points with American voters, and I think they're going to use the Democratic Party as a whipping boy. Because as everybody knows, we only have like 9 Republicans in the whole city of Washington. So, you know, and my opinion is we should put ankle bracelets on all of them and keep track of them. But, you know, I mean, I really see this coming in. We're really going to have to defend ourselves. Anything that the party can do to help us do that and to change that image that, you know, for some reason that Democrats can't run things. And you know what? there's a real feeling among Republicans that we can't run the city, no matter how well it's run, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that's why it's important to have conversations, not just with the loudest activists in the city. You know, you got to have conversations with, you know, people who don't go down to the Wilson Building, who don't have time to go down to the Wilson Building because of family or health obligations. And that's one of the things that we do as a party, is that we moved our meetings outside of the Wilson Building to go around the city to make sure that we're connecting with Democrats around the city, so that we're not creating our own echo chamber. But we want to hear back from residents. And I think that's what's important. Because, you know, I live here in Ward 8, and I got a 7-year-old son, and he said the other night, "Daddy, I'm scared. I hear gunshots. I'm scared." Yeah. You know, and so I'm coming, you know, my perspective is like, no, we have to be tough on crime. We have to do more. We need more police because I feel unsafe.
Yeah.
My neighbor had bullets go through his child's bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, they feel unsafe. Like, you know, so hearing that perspective may change your, you know, may change your legislative priorities. If once you hear all, you know, and granted, you know, all our council members are very busy. They're, you know, the city is growing. There's only so much they can do. But when you know that the loudest voices are emailing your office, or showing up at the Wilson Building, you have to make a point to go talk to those residents who don't show up, but who still have an equal voice in the city.
Well, I got to tell you, I think you hit the nail on the head there, because I think that's our biggest problem nationally, is that we don't understand. Now, I don't know how you felt about the election of Donald Trump, but I've been in politics for 40 years, Democratic politics, and when my family called me up, I said, "Well, this man can't get elected." They said, "Well, we're worried he's going to get elected." No, I said, "Nobody's going to vote for this buffoon. Nobody's going to. I mean, look at Hillary Clinton's resume and look at his resume. Which one would you choose?" You know, but that's because I live in a bubble here in Washington, D.C.,
and we
all felt that way. Mm-hmm. And that's, we're not hearing the voices of people in the Democratic Party. We're not hearing the voices. We're not even hearing the voices of some of the people that used to be loyal Democrats, like labor union people and blue collar workers. And, you know, nationally, we've lost some of those people because I think that you said it exactly right. We're just not listening to them. And we need to do that nationally. So, speaking of national politics, mm-hmm. I've been to the last 11 Democratic conventions
mm-hmm.
in a row, and I've spent a lot of time looking at the backs of the heads of people from Guam and Puerto Rico. So they put us in the rafters every time, mm-hmm. and that's because we're all Democrats, right? They don't have to do anything for us to vote for them. So mm-hmm. is there anything we can do about that? Can we get better seats?
Yeah, we're working on it. Trust me, we are definitely working on it. Not only better seats, but a great hotel location as well, so we can be in the center of the action and really show off. The D.C. statehood movement, because we definitely want statehood to be a part of the convention conversation.
Yeah, you may remember that I put up billboards in North mm-hmm. Carolina because they took statehood out of the platform. And then when we were at the next convention, they had all the women that were serving in Congress come up on stage. They let all these women speak. And Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's the longest serving woman in Congress, they didn't let her say anything.
Oh, you know? Wow.
I mean, they disrespect us on a lot of different levels, and they really shouldn't. I mean, we're the loyalist Democrats, right? We've mm-hmm. never voted for a Republican. I worked for Jimmy Carter. That was my first campaign. And he won Georgia and Washington, D.C., and Minnesota, which is where his running mate was from. And that was it. Those three states, I'm pretty sure. And so we always vote for the Democrat. You would think they would treat us a little better for that, but they take us for granted, unfortunately. Again, for national politics, should we make policy statements as a Democratic Party? Should you guys make policy statements, or do you feel like you should stay out of that arena?
No. We should participate fully in the process. I know the party will. I know the delegates who we elect to go to the convention will do that as well. But of course, the biggest policy conversation we're going to have is D.C. statehood. So we really do look forward to that.
Yeah, it really is at the root of everything else, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, the way we vote, the way we conduct our business, everything. Mm-hmm. And there's been some even more radical proposals made by the Republicans' Congress. One lovely gentleman from Georgia, Andrew Clyde, wants to take away home rule. Marjorie Taylor Greene, this is, you know, if I could do anything, I would hold a meeting in the state of Georgia in her district and ask those people what they were thinking when they elected her. Mm-hmm. But she's called Washington a crime infested hellhole. I mean, I don't know how you can look at this city and say that. They're going to, you know, they won't get rid of home rule. It would never go through the Senate, and the president would never sign it if it did. But they're certainly going to make those attempts, I think. You live in Ward 8. Let's mm-hmm. talk about Ward 8 for a minute. Okay. I'm on the board of directors of a nonprofit that has put hundreds of thousands of dollars into Ward 8. We give out about $800,000 a year, and a bunch of it has gone to Ward 8 because the need in Ward 8 has been the greatest of any ward in the city. Of course, we put some money into Ward 7, too, and some of the other wards, but Ward 8 more than anything. Marion Barry was a guy I loved. I thought, you know, he was the great. I just loved him. But I've got to be honest. He was in office for 40 years. Why do you think Ward 8's not doing better?
Well, you know, Ward 8 loved Marion Barry. And, you know, he was truly a man of the people.
He was.
To walk into any room and be able to connect with whoever was in the room. So he definitely had, he was a great politician, very talented. And so, you know, we have a new council member now, Trayon White, and, you know, we have a lot of community activists who are all working together to be able to improve the quality of life here in the ward. And I think more needs to happen. And I know myself, my neighbors, not only in my immediate neighborhood in Anacostia, but across the ward are working hard every day to advocate for more resources and better services in the community.
Again, my humble opinion is that we need to build more stuff in Ward 8 that mm-hmm. people in Ward 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5 want to come to. We got to build venues that attract people from the other wards to get into Ward 8. It's hard not to fall in love with Ward 8 mm-hmm. if you get to know it, right? Because right. the people there, you know, and they hug each other, they're close. If there's any ward with a sense of community in the District of Columbia, it's Ward 8. You know, when right. I come to Ward 8, the first thing people say to me is, thanks for coming. Yeah. When I go to Ward 3, the first things people say to me is, what have you done for me lately? So, you know, so there, it really is the people of Ward 8. It may not be a wonderful place in some respects, but mm-hmm. but the people in Ward 8 are just amazing people.
Yeah.
Let's talk about crime for a second, mm-hmm. Gun violence, because everybody's worried about it, right? Even my neighbors, who I live in AU Park, mm-hmm. and those people have never been felt unsafe. Even my neighbors are starting to feel unsafe. We had a murder on Connecticut Avenue. We had a gunfight on Ellicott Street. We've had, you know, several other gun-related violations and crimes in the neighborhood. And my neighbors are starting to feel unsafe. What can we do about this, do you think, as a city, as a party, as a resident of Ward 8? I empathize with you having a seven-year-old that's afraid. That's just horrible.
Yeah, I think we have to, before we say what can we do, the important question is, how did we get here? And my personal thought is we got here because of decades of neglect from district government. Like, there were literally no, there's one grocery store for 70,000 people. Like, that just doesn't make sense. And that's at one time, there was no grocery store. I think we need to talk about the reason why we got here is because of the lack of resources, lack of attention to the kids, to the families here in Ward 8. And now Ward 8, Ward 7, and a lot of impoverished communities around the city. And because of that, we see the ill effects of it.
Yeah, and you know, I have three Whole Foods within a mile of my house. Mm-hmm. And that's not all the grocery stores. There's another two. There's a Giant and a Safeway.
Yeah.
But three Whole. That's more Whole Foods than anybody needs. But I used to live on Thomas Circle when Thomas Circle was a really bad neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was the hub for drug distribution and prostitution. And it was the same thing down there. After the riots in 1968, I don't know if you're old enough to remember them, but after the riots of 1968, they didn't rebuild that whole block for years. For years, the block from Thomas Circle down to like S or T Street, they didn't. You know, the stores all the storefronts were all boarded up, and everything was empty. It, you know, that is what I think more than anything, the environment encouraged Thomas Circle to be a hub for drug dealers and prostitutes. Mm-hmm. So what do we need to do we need more infrastructure, certainly. And what do we need to do to clean up? You know, I look at Ballou. When I first took office, Anacostia High School, there were more kids that didn't finish in 4 years than did. So 51% of the class didn't graduate in 4 years. And I mean, I just couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that, you know, the first day of school, the principal would say, you got less of a chance to graduate than you do of graduating. I went to school in Montgomery County. I was a high school dropout. Both my parents died when I was a kid. I was an orphan, and I was a teenager. And you know how, well, you're going to find out how teenagers are in a few years. and I acted out, and I dropped out. It was years before my sister was able to convince me to get back into school, and I stayed until I got a master's degree. But till this day, I have a GED. And I was one of two kids that dropped out of my high school with 2,100 students. Mm-hmm. And so it just amazed me that was happening. Meanwhile, my kids are going to Wilson High School. Their kids, their friends are getting into Yale and Harvard and Princeton and all these schools. And in Ward 8 and Ward 7, we have the lowest SAT scores in the country. What do we need to do about education? Is it a problem getting teachers to work in these schools? Do you know?
I mean, I'm sure there is, but I think you have to deal with the ill effects of poverty. When you look at the literacy rate in Ward 8 and Ward 7, it's scary. And I was telling a buddy of mine, like, you know, I read to my kid every night before he goes to bed. So he's educated even before he gets into a classroom. But that's because I know how to read and write. There are a lot of families in Ward 8, Ward 7, who unfortunately are, you know, families are functionally illiterate. And so how can, it's just more resources need to be placed here in order to help parents do better. And then when the parents do better, the kids can do better.
Well, let me tell you that you just made a friend out of Mrs. Brown, who listens to the show because she's a school librarian. So
okay.
She applauds anybody that reads to their children.
Yeah.
In fact, when Muriel Bowser adopted her little girl, Miranda, the first thing my wife did was go out and buy 5 children's books for her.
Okay.
And we sent them to her because my wife thinks that's some of the finest times of her life, was sitting there reading to my children. And, you know, and I would try to read to them, but they would say, I want mommy to do it. You know, I guess I just wasn't good enough. But that's so important. And I think that's something we ignore too. I say that all the time when I talk. I come to Ward 8 sometimes and I talk to GED students because it bothers me that people that work on GEDs tend to see them as an endpoint. You know, this was, and it could be a beginning. For me, it was a beginning. It opened a door to a community college, which opened a door to a good 4-year university and graduate school. So I try to pass that message along. And I often say nobody drops out of high school because they can't do the work. Mm-hmm. They drop out of high school because they have some problem in their life, you know? And we need to deal with those things. So, you know, when our brilliant citizens in Texas decide that they should replace school counselors with, religious counselors, priests and rabbis, I'm not thinking that's a very good idea. I think we need more counselors and we need more people to intervene in family problems down there.
Yeah.
And elsewhere in the city as well. You know, it's not just restricted to Ward 8, but it's certainly, I mean, when we look at when I sit on the board of this foundation, Jack R. Anderson, and when we consider proposals, grant proposals, the ones from Ward 8 are so compelling, you know, that we really, you know, very often don't go much further than that. So, yeah, I think we need to do more wraparound services, more, you know. And I want to say something about Trayvon White. I don't know a lot about him, but I can tell you that I went out on election day one year when he was running. I think the year he lost. And his campaign workers were the most passionate campaign. Really, I mean, you know, it was like I was happy to tell them that I was from Ward 3 because I was afraid if I mentioned that I couldn't vote for them, you know, that they might slap me around a little because they really, really push hard for the guys. So there's a lot. I know there are a lot of people in Ward 8 that really love him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope he's doing good down there. And, you know, I know my friend Phil Pinnell works hard down there, the Anacostia Coordinating Council. And let me see, what would you like to talk about, Charles? Is there something else that you want to get out there about the Democratic Party or the upcoming elections?
Yeah. So, you know, next year is a big year for us. 2024 is our national convention. It's going to be Chicago, Illinois, August 19th through 22nd. Part of the role of the D.C. Democratic Party and parties across the country is to elect delegates to go down to the convention to help renominate Joe Biden and Vice President Harris as President and Vice President of the United States. So I encourage your listeners to stay connected to the D.C. Democratic Party. You can follow us online at dcdemocraticparty.org. That's dcdemocraticparty.org. And, of course, we're on Facebook, and Instagram and all that good stuff. So stay tuned for that. And then on June 24th, I believe that's a Saturday, one of the last Saturdays in June, we're going to actually have a barbecue. And we're calling the event Barbecue in Politics. The event is going to be held at Fort Lincoln Park from 1 to 4 p.m. So, Senator Brown, we're encouraging you and your supporters to come on out and let's fellowship as Democrats and, you know, remind all of us here, all of us, like, why we're here and the important work that we do.
Well, I certainly will try. My wife has a family reunion planned for our both sides of the family in Virginia Beach, but I think it starts on Sunday. I think it's Sunday to Sunday. So, and it's that last week of June. But if it is, I certainly will be there, because the two things I love most in life are barbecue and politics. Let me ask you, your meetings are open to the public? If just anybody can come to a Democratic State Committee meeting?
Anybody can come. We typically meet on the first Thursday of the month. We typically start off with a reception at 6:30. Meeting starts at 7. And this past Thursday, we actually met in Ward 8 at the Rise Center. And I think next month, we're scheduled to meet somewhere in Ward 4. So stay tuned for details. And, you know, follow us online with all that information.
Well, and that's a great idea that you do that. I remember the days when they used to meet in the Wilson Building.
Yeah.
And that is not only insular, but it's probably illegal, you know, because it's partisan politics. But,
yeah.
But they used to meet there every, you know, that was the place. So I think it's great that you're coming out into the wards and that people are getting involved. Because that's what we need. And, you know, we expect, I know that the Democratic Party has traditionally in the District of Columbia done outreach to other states. I think we understand that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are going to win the election here in D.C. So since I've been a D.C. resident, I've campaigned in Minnesota. I've campaigned in Philadelphia for Obama and in Missouri for Obama. And I also campaigned for Clinton in different states. So do you have any kind of organized plan to put people out to campaign in other states? Because that helps our statehood movement too, that people see us. Go ahead.
Yeah. Our Blue Wave Victory Committee is putting a plan together for us to get involved in states that are in the eastern region part of the United States. Mm-hmm. So district, we're part of the eastern region at the DNC. So that means every state from D.C. to the state of Maine are our partners. So most likely we'll be involved in races in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and battleground states in our caucus.
Well, that's great. And what about the convention? Do we have, I know that traditionally what we've done is we speak at breakfast. Every delegation has a breakfast every morning where they get their briefing and, you know, the day's activities. Usually the credentials are handed out daily, so they pick up their credentials, they do all that stuff. And as a rule, they have allowed people to speak before the breakfast. And usually when I'm out there, you know, every time I've been out there, which is every time actually, they allow me to speak in front of different delegations. And usually Paul, Senator Strauss and Oye and I, Representative Oluwalawa and I will like divide them up, try to, you know, but we can only, the three of us in 4 days, we can only reach 12 committees. So can we get help from the Democratic Party? Can we enlist some of your people to do that? Some of the delegates to do that on our behalf? Because I think, you know, putting Washingtonians in front of everybody, a lot of people have a bad image about Washington. They think we all, you know, besides the crime and the other stuff, they think we all work for the IRS. I mean, really. I once went to Ohio, I'll tell you, to lecture a bunch of deans from colleges. My brother was a president of a college. And these guys were all deans and presidents of college. Not one person in the room that didn't have a doctorate degree. And nobody understood the situation in D.C. I mean, they knew we weren't represented, but they didn't know we didn't have control over our own budget or our own legal system. They didn't understand any of that. In fact, I had to say it several times. They'd say, oh, you don't have control over your budget. Oh, you mean the tax money the federal government gives you? And I go, no, the tax money we raise. And they say, well, not your property taxes and things like that. I go, yeah, our property taxes. And, you know, so, there's a lot of misconceptions about the District of Columbia. And I think when they see real people, especially people that are not politicians, people that are, you know, in everyday life are, you know, teachers and lawyers and doctors and, you know, they do other things, that it brings it home for them in a sense. So I think that would be a great thing.
I know when most people think of Washington, they think of the White House and all the buildings they see on the National Mall.
Yeah.
They don't see Washingtonians that live, work, and play here in the district. So we definitely want to be able to find creative ways to highlight the district at the convention, and we look forward to your help and everyone else's to make that
happen.
Oh,
yeah, I would love to help. And I volunteer for just about anything. Obviously, I volunteer to be the senator. But, you know, it's amazing what they'll let you do if you're willing to volunteer. I really want to do that. And I want to thank you for being on the show, Charles. We've just about run out of time. Again, I want to say, is there any one question you want to ask or talk about that we didn't cover?
No, just, you know, encourage the listeners to stay connected to the D.C. Democratic Party. We invite all Democrats to our meetings. We want to be able to connect with as many Democrats as we can. So we'll look forward to that.
Well, thank you for being on. I mean, that's the perfect way to end the show. And thank you so much for being on the show. I look forward to talking to you in the future. And I look forward to eating some of your barbecue if I get the chance.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks again, Charles.
All right. Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Thanks. At the end of the show, we always play a song in honor of our guests and maybe the subject matter of the show. Tonight, I want to play a song that's a favorite of mine that goes out to every politician in America. This is a question that I think everybody answers. I think Charles Wilson brought it up, and I think that this is the one question that every American asks of politicians. So here's one by Pink called What About Us?
That we stood up and made the tough choices that needed to be made to preserve our way of life.
We are going to the
jet. I don't know about you.
I don't
want my children and grandchildren.
We are going to the jet. Racism.
An American
century.
We are going to the jet.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to